Interview with James O. Powell, editorial page editor, Arkansas Gazette, June 14th, 1974, Little Rock, Arkansas.
Hi, when I talked to you briefly yesterday, you said you thought you had some views that might be different from some other people's. I'd like to elaborate on that.
Well, the best thing maybe it would be for you just to ask me whatever questions. Of course, I just have sort of a basic idea of what you're doing. It might be better if you wanted to ask questions. I'd be more in focus, perhaps, with what you have in mind.
Well, you've been here 15 years now.
Yes.
What are the basic political changes you've seen in that period of time?
Well, we're speaking of in Arkansas.
Arkansas.
Well, in Arkansas, the political change here has been dramatic because, of course, Faubus is Faubus and the Faubus era are now out, and they were, of course, when I came here in 1959. Let's see, Faubus still had, he had 6 years left to go at that point. Would it be seven, 6 or 7 years to go? And then Winthrop Crockett fella came in, a very dramatic cleansing of the state government under Rockefeller, which continued under Bumpers. Presumably, and I think it will continue now under David Pryor. So the reformation of the political system, of the politics in Arkansas has been dramatic now. And of course in the style of the politicians, of the successful politicians, has changed. Now that's in the context of Arkansas. Of course, in the context of the whole South, I'm not sure that this New South is real. I think there's a great deal of illusion in it. We've seen the New South reincarnated at least umpteen times since Henry Grady, but I'm not sure that it's all that profound. I'm not sure that. Now, I'm speaking now more of the South than I am of. I'm speaking more of the South as a whole than I am of Arkansas in this context. I think probably Arkansas has come further than the rest of the South.
Why do you think the New South is an illusion?
Excuse me?
Why do you think that the New South or New South?
Well, there are a number of items in this case. One of them, for example, is that we turn out our best men and have been doing it regularly since the end of World War II. We raise them up and turn them out. Collins in Florida, for one example, who was, of course, it is true that Askew is a very good man. Florida has gone through a cycle all the way from Collins to Askew, but in the meantime, of course, they had Kirk and that Jackson, Hayden Burns in Jacksonville, who were very bad governors. But in any case, in 1968, Collins, who I think was one of the two greatest governors of the post-war South, was rejected in favor of Gurney, of all people. Georgia, Jimmy Carter, I'm not sure that there's very much basic difference between Jimmy Carter and Lester Maddox, except that Carter's style is more subdued. But I remember very well that Carter demagogued the Kelly case, for example, and the busing issue just about as shamelessly as any of the old demagogues. It is my understanding in Georgia that Maddox is is the favorite to come back. In Alabama, there's George Wallace. I think the idea of a reformed George Wallace is just a romantic nonsense. Certainly I don't think there's any basic change in Alabama or Mississippi. Waller is governor. Well, another part of this evidence is involved there. Recently, Nixon, for example, when he goes somewhere as refuge, he always goes to the deepest southern city he can find. He goes down to Jackson, Mississippi on one of his last excursions, and was greeted warmly by Governor Waller. Nixon is a symbol of reaction, and has depended very much on the Deep South, especially for his support. It's where his strongest support lies, I think. Tennessee, instead of Gore and Kefauver, now we have Baker and the other guy. Gore and Kefauver were great liberal Southern Democrats, or great liberal National Democrats, actually. Now we've got Baker and what's the other guy's name?
Brock.
Yes, Brock. Who do we turn out? We turn out Fulbright. We turn out and Yarbrough in Texas, Gore in Tennessee, as I've mentioned, Collins in Florida. We have some pretty respectable governors. They are more, I think, on the periphery, especially Askew. I think Askew is the best of the group. But Bumpus has been a respectable governor, and I gather that West in South Carolina has. But as for Wallace and Carter and Waller, I don't think very much of them. In 1968, some more just items at random on this business that makes me doubt how fundamental is the change of the New South. In 1968, Nixon, of course, his greatest margins were in the South. It's certainly outside of certain Republican strongholds, I'm sure his greatest margins were in the South. I think the best of congressional district of all was in the Biloxi congressional district, I believe, where I think he got 87% of the vote. But we commented in 1968 that what had happened in that election really was that as you remember, Nixon Nixon rode the busing issue very hard, and it was a very popular issue. By that time, it had become a popular issue nationally, and so we remarked at the time that instead of the South joining the nation or the country, that the country had joined us, and I think there's a great deal of truth in that in the context of the racial issue. The busing thing. You remember the recent House vote on. This attempt to hitch an anti-busing rider on the Federal Appropriation Act. I analyzed that vote, and we noted at the time that, although of course by that time the amendment would have passed if the South had not even voted. However, in those circumstances, it would have been a reasonably close mix of a vote. But in the whole of the old Confederacy, there were six votes against that anti-busing rider. Three of them were the blacks, Young in Atlanta, the lady in Houston, and the other one, wherever he or she is, I've forgotten. Maybe it was Texas too. And anyhow, there were six votes, and I remember we counted. I counted three of them were blacks, two were Spanish or Latin Americans, and one, I believe, Gonzalez in San Antonio, and one was a Jewish school teacher in Miami Beach. There was one other from Texas, I'm not sure. That was the only one I couldn't identify with some, at least coincidentally or not, with some minority group himself. So the vote there was just a massive, the South stood solidly for this amendment, which the amendment was not germane to the bill. I think it was patently unconstitutional because the Congress can't tell the U.S. courts how they're going to implement a constitutional right. It was really a bad amendment and a racist amendment, essentially. The only votes that I counted in the South, of the six votes, five of them were identified. Three of them were black, and two others were identified with other minorities. Meantime, the country, on this same vote, the amendment carried outside, but there was quite a division on it. I remember, for example, this would illustrate the thesis that the country is joining us rather than us joining the country, except they haven't come along as far as we have.
Are you saying that the politics of race in the South is still the key to understanding what's happening?
It is certainly very, very powerful. In the context of racial desegregation, I don't know that the South's attitudes have really changed, except in simply in recognizing, practicalities of what we have to accept. I'm not sure just how far to go with this conclusion. I'm really turning it over in my mind, and it's something that we work out on editorially, have worked out on editorially, time to time, sometimes with a little, what we think is wry humor, and sometimes seriously. It's all done seriously. And I'm not sure exactly how far to go with in the conclusions, except that I think a great deal of it is illusion. Now, I don't even try to get into the economics of it, except that on the economic side of it, where we are, on the most of the southern states, we're still the Deep South is certainly at the low end of the per capita income levels. The Eugene Lyons, who is an English professor at the University of Arkansas at Little Rock out here, has a great line which is catching on in some quarters, which is that the New South is the Old South with dentures. And I don't know whether you encountered that one previously or not. All of this is just sort of a mass of odds and ends, which leads me to be skeptical about the concept that we have in the South have undergone a great reformation. I was at the American Society of Newspaper Editors convention, which met this year in Atlanta, as you might even have been there, I don't know. But in any case, there was a great resurgence of this thesis again, and Andrew Young, of course, was so enthusiastic about everything that was going on in the South that it was very, I'm sure that probably most of the audience was probably convinced, but Atlanta is not the South, nor is Little Rock. Certainly Atlanta is not the South any more than Atlanta is Georgia.
So you don't think there's been a basic attitude change about race?
I don't think so. Not basically. Well, let's put it this way. I'm highly skeptical about whether there has been any basic change of attitudes. You get into the very deepest South, meaning Alabama and Mississippi, for examples that I know of, and this private school thing, these Christian Segi academies are very much in vogue. And very large percentage, as you know, a very large percentage of the white children are going to these new academies, and in some places I'm not sure how widespread, but I fear that it's fairly widespread. In some places, the public school system has virtually been turned over. Has virtually become a black school system. You know, there are a lot of different patterns in this, but there's entirely too much of the turning the white education over to these private academies, as they're called. I'm still working all of this over in my mind, trying to reach some conclusions. Harder than I have now, except that I have very large doubts about how much of it is real.
And how about in Arkansas?
Well, in Arkansas, We are certainly, there is more of the New South, I think, it is more real in Arkansas certainly than it is in Mississippi or Alabama or Louisiana. I think Tennessee is such an ultra-conservative state now, in almost any way you cut it, in sociology and politics. I think Arkansas has come further than the deepest South, certainly. There are variations within the state. Now, under the federal requirements, we have thoroughly integrated the schools of Little Rock. Under federal compulsion, under the court orders. It was token until the judge finally started employing busing, as well as getting stricter with what had amounted to a sort of a gerrymandering or in any case a refusal to redistrict. A refusal to redraw the lines of school attendance to make something more than token desegregation. But in any case, the key instrument was busing, about which there was a great resentment, and for a time the school board elections were dominated by the issues, by the issue, although not anymore. But we did, we have thoroughly integrated the school system of Little Rock under the federal order. Now Little Rock is the only city, I think, in the state that does this, because actually we are the only city. I'm not sure how much. Well, the truth is I don't really know, but there's very little busing for the purpose of school integration outside of Little Rock, because most of Arkansas is rural and small town. So we have achieved that, although it was strictly under federal compulsion, because we would never, the school boards that were elected in the years of when it was first being started were essentially neo-segregationist school board majorities. They were, and they wouldn't have done it except the federal courts required. Of course, here and everywhere, we've the public accommodations are thoroughly integrated. I suppose that is fairly general. At least in the cities of the South, and I'm not sure how far it reaches into the country. But I think it's probably prevalent throughout the South.
Is the political leadership of Arkansas different than the other southern states?
Well, I think the political leadership of Arkansas is certainly different from the political leadership in Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana. I would say it's currently that it's similar to it in Florida. In the governor's office now have quite a lot in common, and South Carolina, from what I hear of West. So it would be a yes and no pattern. Reverting back to that thesis of about the ones that we turn out of office in the South and the ones that we keep in office. Thurmond, we don't turn out Thurmond or Eastland or Stennis or any of the symbols and practitioners of the philosophy of the Old South. We don't turn them out. It's the ones that we turn out are those who are in one context or another are liberals. Those are the ones that fall casualty. But I just thought of that particular angle that I hadn't developed. But returning to Arkansas, we have made a lot of progress in turning out Faubus and defeating Faubus and other politicians of his type. But
Faubus was elected six times governor of Arkansas, voluntarily retired, 1966, came back in 1970 and got defeated in the Democratic primary.
Yes.
By somebody totally unknown, no experience, who ran a campaign on basically projecting an image of being trusted. And does this suggest you that there was a basic change there in Arkansas?
change in that Arkansas has rejected Arkansas has rejected the racist demagogues of the old type. Faubus being maybe the one of the very early members of the type. So certainly there has been a change in that respect. Now, but Arkansas still doesn't accept, Arkansas would not accept a liberal, a racial liberal.
How do you interpret
again,
this?
I'm not sure in the racial sense and in the broader political context, I'm not really sure how much of it is the rejection is simply a rejection of the worst most obvious racists.
Didn't Rockefeller basically run as a liberal on race?
No, he was. He didn't run as that. The black vote, which he got, was critical in his success. But
I'm talking about in his second term. During his first term in office, didn't he pretty much establish a record, at least for?
Now he did. Now that is
moderation. That in the context of Arkansas and tradition of Arkansas would have to be at least liberal for this state.
Certainly. And moreover,
and yet he got reelected.
He was reelected. Yes. What Rockefeller did, actually, the real reform in Arkansas was in his, insofar as the state government was concerned, was in his administration. And I would not diminish that at all.
How do you assess the total impact of Rockefeller?
Well, I think his total impact was definitely good. He was a reform governor, and I think his accomplishment, I think, was larger than Bumpus because he had so much more to do. One of the greatest things he did insofar as the blacks are concerned was to introduce them substantially into the state employment. There had been very few blacks. This is the greatest thing he did, I'm not sure what the relative figures are from Rockefeller to Bumpus. But in any case, it was Rockefeller that made it really a big breakthrough in introducing black people into state employment. And certainly that was a major accomplishment there. So that would certainly have to be listed as an important progress for the state. I get back to the point that I think we have come much further in Arkansas than in the deepest South.
Do you think, Peter, that Arkansas had reached a point where it could not go back to the days of a racist politician, even a subtly racist politician, getting elected?
Well, I'm not sure about the last part of that, the subtly racist politician, but I think Arkansas is at the point now where the old style racist demagogue like Faubus or Jim Johnson, you remember, who was the Democratic nominee against Rockefeller the first time. I think we're past that point. I don't think we'll go back to that. The question I guess will be whether we will go much further than we are now. I don't know. I don't try to answer that. Trying to put these things together. Again, I come back to the different patterns in the South, and with the Deep South in one pattern, and or rather the deepest South in one pattern, and those of us on the periphery in another, and on the periphery we are much closer to the a national norm, I think.
The there's some quarters, which I'm sure you're aware of, in Arkansas who criticized the Gazette.
Yes, I've heard that. you should read our letters.
But there are those who say that contend that there was an inconsistency and that the Gazette supported Bumpers for 4 years and considered him an outstanding governor, and suddenly he became the worst sort of person when he ran against Fulbright.
Well, of course, that's a familiar thing that's said against us. Of course, the truth is that the idea that we that our relationship with Bumpers over 4 years was one of unstinted admiration and praise is simply not so, because although we endorsed him twice for governor, and think that in some he was a good governor, we criticized him very severely on very heavily, substantially, on a number of things during his administration. For example, we thought that the community college program, which in some states I think is probably very good, was a very serious error to get started in Arkansas, and it's still very dangerous unless a lid is put on it, simply because of the finances that are required to support a proliferating system of community colleges such as Mississippi has, which had 19 the last time that I counted them. On the community college issue, we opposed Bumpers on that, described it as Bumpers' folly. This was during his administration. We opposed him, we nailed him hard for taking a walk on the Democratic National Ticket in 1972, when Fulbright, for example, who was supposed to be, you know, theoretically is the guy that was off in Washington, but actually that was never really true. And Fulbright was very prominent and active and for the Democratic National Ticket. Bumpers was nowhere to be found, and he would appear at rallies and never mention the name of the Democratic, the principal Democratic nominee. We nailed him hard on that issue and on others. When he turned on Fulbright, opposed him vigorously all the way. Because, well, for one thing, the Gazette has supported Fulbright for 30 years, not on every issue again, but Gazette is a great supporter of Fulbright. And moreover, Fulbright and Bumpers belonged generally to the same philosophical school, I would say, in politics. They had been friends and allies, and when Bumpers elected to, judging correctly that all he had to do was to run to win, when he elected to run against Fulbright, we alleged that he broke the unwritten rules of the game, that you don't turn on someone who helped you become governor and who has been your friend and who belongs to the same general political alliance that you did for any reason except pure ambition. We thought and still think that his displacement of Fulbright was a disservice to the state and, more important, a disservice to the country. Now, of course, he's won now, and he can make his own record. And we will hope that he makes a good senator. But his successful candidacy against Fulbright, I think, was a great disservice to the country. And I'm not sure that anybody but Bumpus would have beaten Fulbright.
What do you attribute to Fulbright's low level of popularity, low level of support after 30 years in the U.S. Senate?
Well, number of factors, fairly involved subject, but I would say that, of course, there was a residual war hawk school ready to oppose him with anyone. Fulbright is an intellectual and a man of reserve, and he has never been really popular. I suppose in that extent he has always been vulnerable to someone who was really popular and charismatic and all that. It was essentially a popularity contest, and Bumpus won it easily. But I'm not sure, as I say, that there's anyone else on the scene who could have done it.
Basically, your position was that Bumpus was playing the role of opportunist.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Exactly. We called it a study in the politics of opportunism.
In your opinion, was this based on just ambition for the national ticket?
No. I think because you could argue that either way. I think it was simply ambition. The national ticket thing is, as everyone knows, is so speculative and such a long range shot that I think that was incidental. I think he simply wanted to be a United States senator, and he didn't care who he displaced or what sort of political civil war he set off to become senator. That's what he was going to do, and he did. The scars of this will run deep a long time. They always do in situations like this. Again, I say in reference to the Arkansas Gazette, Bumpus will now make his own record, and if it's a good record, splendid. And we hope that he does make a good record. In all candor, the prospects that he would ever match or almost anyone would match the record of J.W. Fulbright, who we describe as one of the giants of the 20th century Congress. The prospects that he or anyone would match that kind of record would be unlikely, certainly. But we hope he makes a good senator. And I would hope that he will move toward the progressive side rather than the other side. Although the true orientation of his political thought has always been, and still is, very hard to determine. In his office, he has one of the old old liberal, Arkansas liberals, Irene Samuels. And he also has one who's extremely conservative, if not reactionary, and that's Martin Burkett, who is a former mayor of Little Rock, and, which illustrates the ability he has had to persuade people of divergent philosophies. But no one really knows whether he's closer to Martin Burkett or to Irene Samuels. I frankly think the indications are I suspect that he's philosophically closer to Burkett myself. But we don't know. He may be in a formative period where he will go either way. I don't know.
Because that's the state's largest paper. How do you assess its impact of the editorial page?
It's as it is, I think, with any newspaper, which is very outspoken. It's a great variation. Sometimes we're immensely effective. Sometimes we're just shouting in a high wind, as we were in this Senate race, which we argued passionately even before it started. We made a great impression with the people who were already for Fulbright. But we move very few people in that race. There are other times when our influence is decisive. Sometimes it's just in this race there was we were all shouting in a high wind, in the same way that it was during the years when the Little Rock School Board races were dominated by the busing issue. They're not anymore because the busing is a thing accomplished. But in those years, every school board election would come up every year, another seat, one or two seats would come up, and every year the vote would be about 60% for the neo-Seggies and about 40% for the liberals, and we would argue every race. We would be very outspoken in every contest endorsing the liberals where we found one, which was in most cases, but I don't think we ever moved a vote. In other places we're very effective. For example, when the community college issue came to a referendum in Pulaski County here not long ago. The whole establishment of the county was for the community college. You know, the idea would be another educational establishment. We have had serious doubts about it all the time because of the fact that Arkansas has a well-distributed system of four-year colleges in a fairly lightly populated state. Colleges and universities which have never been adequately financed and are just now beginning to be adequately financed. And the idea of siphoning off this money into a whole new system of instant colleges, we thought was very dangerous. But anyway, in this local race, the whole establishment, everybody except the Gazette, because we're very much part of the establishment, the whole entire establishment except for the Gazette was endorsing and working for the community college, which would be supported by the state after the local taxpayers raised the money, but the election went 4-1 against it. And that one, I think, of course, I don't think they could have made it, but on the other hand, but in that race, I think we were very, in that case, we were very influential. In other cases, for example, in the governor's race that we've just had, which was very close prior, as you know, got 51% of the vote, I think our endorsement of Pryor and our recitation of the former scandals, in that case, I think we made the difference between it going into a runoff and not. I think possibly, uh, possibly, if we have made a contribution on the Gazette to the political climate of the state, I think perhaps it's more in the broad application, in the general thinking of the people over a long period of time, as distinguished from any particular race, where I can point to what we regard as a triumph, or I can point to another case of utter defeat. But I do think that we are very unbuttoned in our commentary, and have never made the slightest effort to suggest that we represent, that we do or should speak for the majority opinion at any given time. We don't speak for anyone but the Arkansas Gazette.
But do you see yourself as playing kind of a liberal voice or liberal
yes.
role or moderate role in a perception
yes.
conservative environment?
Exactly. And I think that our principal contribution, if we've made one, has been to foster an atmosphere of free expression in Central Arkansas. We say things that on the Gazette that no newspaper in Alabama, for example, would dream of saying. We endorse candidates, I suspect, that elect McGovern, but no newspaper in Alabama. Again, going back to the Deep South, I'm talking about that no newspaper in Alabama would endorse. But I think that in Central Arkansas especially, we have contributed to a general freedom of expression. We have a very strong, a very loud and articulate and aggressive liberal community in Arkansas, in Little Rock especially. And they're not afraid of anybody. In fact, I think they are really meaner than the right wingers. Speaking in some jest. Anyway, no one in Little Rock, I think, has to worry about not saying what they feel about each other.